Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special year-end episode reflecting on some of the powerful stories we got to hear on this program in 2023. World War II veteran Les Doyle showed us a whole museum full of Chevrolets he has restored in his retirement, but he never would have had that opportunity without a little help he received in the Philippines, where he came ashore at Leyte the same day that General Douglas MacArthur made his famous return.
I waited ashore with MacArthur's group. There at the on October 20, I was with the group. That's a great day in history, October morning of October 20, and I was there with MacArthur and his group.
So tell me about it. Was that as big a deal at the time as it seems to be now? Did you understand the significance of that?
I wouldn't say that I understood all the significance of it. To me, I was just trying to do what needed to be done at the time and do my job.
So what'd you have to do there?
Well, my job of action has always been communication, keeping the lines open.
So you guys come ashore there, and it's the same thing? You're going into the jungle to string telephone line and make sure they can communicate?
Yes. We just try to do whatever your job was, just try to do it the best you can.
Well, and when I showed up at your house here in Strathmore, the first thing I noticed was your big sparkling photo from when you went to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight in April of 2015 and all you guys in front of the National World War II Memorial. The next thing I saw was a P-38, and I was trying to figure out, why is there a P-38? You weren't in the Army Air Corps. What is going on here? And then I realized this entire metal sculpture here is made out of bullets, different calibers. The stand is one caliber and the twin fuselage is a different caliber. I'll put a picture of this at hometownheroesradio.com, but you made that little sculpture for a very special reason. Tell me the story behind that.
Well, one day when I was searching for breaking a line, there wasn't a group around or anything. I was sort of by myself searching the line. And then I hear a plane coming and look up and here's a Zero pursuing in my direction. So what's going to happen? Am I going to get bombed out? But before that Zero had the opportunity to get to me, here come a P-38 out of the clouds, and that was the end of that Zero. So this P-38 pilot saved my life literally right there on the spot. And so I'm a creator of different objects and whatnot. I just had to create this little miniature P-38 as a little memory of what happened that day, a tribute to the P-38 pilot.
And, you know, I'm not trying to be melodramatic about it, but there are a lot of questions that arise because I just heard you say that he saved your life, and I could tell that still stirs some emotions for you. You know, this is almost 80 years later now. So if that P-38 hadn't been there, what do you think would have happened?
I wouldn't have made it home. That's in plain English. I'd been a few fragments left there from the plane.
So you think the plane would have dropped a bomb, destroyed the work that you were doing and you?
Yeah, or machine gun me, you know, down.
So before that P-38 came out, and I realize this may be seconds we're talking about, the span of time, but what was going through your mind when you saw the Japanese plane coming your way? Because there's not a lot you can do, is there?
No, you know, I have the good Lord on my side, so I'm not one to fret a lot or whatnot. I was there to do a job, and I was trying to do it. And if this plane comes in there and bombs or shoots at me, whatever, so be it. That was my job to do, and I was going to do it the best I could.
Yeah. And again, I realize this can transpire in a matter of seconds, but I'm just curious for you. Is there a thought, well, I need to try to take cover? Do you sit there and say a prayer? Are you scared? I'm just wondering about the emotions involved.
Well, the emotions you have in a situation like that, a person like me that has a good solid ground to cling to, whatever comes about, comes about. You're there and you're at their mercy. So unless somebody comes along to assist you, why, you're in trouble.
So the other half of that is, what did it feel like when you saw that P-38 Lightning come out of nowhere to shoot the Japanese plane down?
I just took a deep breath because I was so grateful and thankful, and that's the reason that I created this miniature P-38 out of bullets to constantly remind me through life of what that plane pilot did for me.
How long ago do you think it was that you made that?
Oh, I made it. I brought these shell pieces home from the war, and I got right onto it as soon as I got home.
So these shells are from World War II, and you've had that?
These shells home from the war, yes. Yeah. And the trouble I had trying to construct a little plane like this, I just had the old family soldering iron to heat it. Well, with this copper and brass and whatnot, I'd heat one area there, and my anchor lead would run out another spot because the heat transferred so in that. And so I had a little problem creating my plane.
Well, it's still standing. It has stood the test of time, and we'll put a little photo and a video of Mr. Doyle telling that story at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for you. Have you ever wondered who that pilot was or what happened to him the rest of the war?
No, I can't say as I did because he got away at that point, so that was the end of my connection to that. I was so grateful that he come in, though, and knocked that other plane, that Zero plane, out of the way and saved my life. Yep. That's what credit him for, is saving my life.
Again, that was World War II veteran Les Doyle, one of so many veterans who shared emotional wartime moments with us on Hometown Heroes in 2023. Another was Bob Nguyen, who served as a company commander in the 3rd Marine Division in Vietnam.
After I was there for 2 weeks, we were in a major base called Phu Bai, and it was kind of down in the rice paddy area, and that's where I picked up my platoon on January 4th, and it seemed kind of quiet, and we ran ambushes at night and patrols during the day, and nothing ever seemed to happen, and I thought this was pretty easy duty. It was kind of like a walk in the sun. Then they loaded us on C-130s and told us they were taking us to a fire support base up on the DMZ called Con Tien. And when we got up in the air, the plane turned suddenly sharp 90-degree left, which to me meant west, and they told us where they were taking us to a place called Quezon, which ended up being a rather famous siege combat base during the early part of the first Tet Offensive of January 1968 and lasted through about April 1968. And so I was on a hill position 5,000 meters outside the wire protecting the combat base with a couple of other rifle companies, and eventually they let us. We just sat there and took a pounding. We were supposedly surrounded by 30, 40, 50,000 NVA. Nobody knew for sure on hillsides on three sides of us, which was not a good place to be. And eventually they let us out of the wire in April 6th and 7th of 1968. And we were the first company-sized patrol that ever went out of the wire anywhere around. There were about 5,000 Marines on all the hill positions in the main base. And as the first company-sized combat patrol, it was obviously we were going out to search and destroy, and we went up 2,000 or 3,000 meters outside the wire up one of the ridge lines that was surrounding us, and we ran into the enemy. And that day, the first day, my platoon was in reserve. We lost probably half the people in the first and third platoon. The second day, we went back up. My platoon was in the lead, and we went up with 43 men in my platoon, and only 7 walked off, and I was not one of them. Only 7 went back that night. The rest were all medevaced. That was my first real experience at hand-to-hand, being close enough to be able to, you know, shoot at people eye-to-eye, throw hand grenades at each other. And while I was in the landing zone waiting to be medevaced back to Da Nang, I had one of my sergeants die in my arms, and he kept looking at me saying, "Help me, Lieutenant, help me, help me." And I knew from the wounds that he had suffered that there was nothing I could do but just to hold on to him.
And you're a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. I can feel, I don't know if stoicism is the right word, but you're in control of your emotions as you describe these intense experiences very matter-of-factly. But as you share that story of holding that Marine in your arms, I get the sense that when you talk about that, you see that again, you feel that again, you're there again.
Yeah, I told that story probably 50 times, and I choke up every time.
You remember his name?
Staff Sergeant Herman Lohman.
And he'd been in your platoon for a while?
He was my right guide, and that's like the, you have a platoon leader who's a lieutenant, and you have a platoon sergeant, and then you have a right guide, so he was like the number three guy.
So, I mean, even somebody listening who's never been in the military, they can think of the people they spend time with, their friends, their, you know, the ones they go out to dinner with or play golf with or whatever. I mean, this is somebody that you're spending that kind of time with on a daily basis, right?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
So most of us have not been in that situation that you're describing. Can you help us understand what that feels like, what that's really like in a moment like that? And it, if I'm not mistaken, while you're holding him in your arms, knowing that he's not going to make it, you're wounded yourself too, right?
Yeah, but not near as seriously as a lot of the other people were in the LZ. And you know, the thing that I talk about is that it takes me back to what my father said. You can do everything right and everything goes wrong. And I did everything right. It just part of, we went out looking for them and we found them and they found us, and it was just a dogfight.
What do you feel? What do you think? What do you focus on in a moment like that? Your friend is in your arms and you know he's not going to make it.
I don't know. I think you're just kind of numb, but I describe that. You ask about a significant incident because that was the first experience. I had been there about 3 months, and that was the first experience where I physically, we were in a firefight, and I physically lost people. He wasn't the only one. There were a lot of others, too, that died that day, but he was just one that I physically watched him die in my arms. But it prepared me for the next 9 months that was left, or 9 or 10 months that was left on my tour. So it was the first time, but it was, certainly wasn't the last time. So it just prepares you. You just get steeled to the fact that this is what you do, and this is just going to happen, and you just have to move on. It's your job.
These days, Bob Wynn helps his fellow veterans deal with the effects of PTSD. What a noble calling. It is time for our final break, but when we come back, one more powerful story we heard here on Hometown Heroes this year from a man who gave up his hand to save multiple lives and was awarded the Medal of Honor as a result. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.